You're listening to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
Big John McCarthy has witnessed the best that the UFC had to offer.
That is it! Game, set, match! We have a new champion!
Your backstage pass to the world of mixed martial arts and combat sports. Only on the Ignotainment Media Network.
Let's get it on!
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and me, Sean Wheelock. Every week on this podcast, John and I give you an inside look at MMA and combat sports, always separating fact from fiction. On this week's program, we'll discuss the heavy schedule of UFC events, which has included four shows over an eight-day span earlier this month and a reported total of 45 shows this year. Big John and I will also examine the fallout from highly popular cutman Stitch Duran's firing from the UFC following his critical comments of the promotion's deal with Reebok. And we'll look at the no contest in the Chris Honeycutt versus Paul Bradley fight from last Friday's Bellator 140, which John refereed and which came about as a result of an accidental clash of heads. Plus, as we do on every episode of Let's Get It On, John will answer your questions. Fire away via email with your questions to info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Again, that's info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Remember that you can download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Well, the UFC is, of course, coming off of a stretch earlier this month, in which they held four events over 8 days. Between May 10th and August 23rd, the UFC scheduled 16 events. Now, to put that number in perspective, for all of the year 2009, the UFC held a grand total of 20 events. Dana White said in an interview on Canada's Sportsnet, quote, "There's no such thing as diluting the product," and indicated that the UFC, John, is looking to increase its schedule next year and in the immediate years to follow. So weird state of MMA, because 10 years ago, the gripe of the fans was, we can hardly see it. Now, apparently, the gripe of the fans is, quit it. Too much product already. Knock it off. We don't want this much.
I can't take it. I'm seeing too much. Or I can't see it, so I don't know what to do. You know what? Look it. All you can do is put your product out there, and if someone wants to see it, they watch it. If they don't want to watch it, don't watch it. You know, that's just as basic as it gets. Here's the problem that people aren't understanding. When you're the, you know, everybody wants the UFC to be this, you know, monster organization, which, yeah, you know what, they're pretty monstrous as far as the size of them and what they're doing, but they want things the way they want them, but they don't understand the business side and what, you know, the UFC has to do to contractually meet certain things. And there's elements there when you're this juggernaut of an organization that has 500 plus fighters. Well, I want you to think about this. If you have over 500 fighters, let's say they have 600 because they're getting close. So they have 600 fighters, and each fighter contractually has three fights a year that the UFC has to at least offer them. They don't end up having to take it. And if the person doesn't take it, then the UFC is clear contractually. But they've got to offer that fighter at least three fights during that year. So that's 1,800 fights. Break that down. I want you to think, if you have, you know, 1,800 fights and you have 18 fights per show, that's 100 shows. this is a lot of fights, okay? There's a lot going on there. So they've got to do shows to give these fighters the fights that contractually they're there for, because the fighter needs to fight to make money. This is their living. So they're in a quandary of, you know, when people say, oh, it's diluted. Well, it's diluted because people have become almost, you know, jaded. And they want to see the best people all the time. They want to see the championship fights all the time. And when you're looking at it, you can't always have that. So when, you know, you're getting a fight night and it's, you know, got, you know, Frank Mir against Todd Duffy as your headliner, and people go, oh, that's crap. Well, there's nothing crap about that. You got Josh Thompson against Tony Ferguson. That's a great fight. But they're so used to these cards that from top to bottom are stacked with names that they recognize. And so it becomes that card that they want to see, that when all of the cards are not that way, they're going, oh, it's becoming diluted. It's diluted because they, as a fan, don't know all of these fighters. But there's only one way for you to learn about these fighters and get to know them and get to like them and become a fan of theirs. And that's for someone to put them into a show that's on TV that you get to watch. And all of a sudden you say, dude, that guy's exciting. That girl's fantastic. You know, look, let's be honest. A couple of months ago, how many people knew who Joanna Jędrzejczyk is? How right. many people really knew who she was? Now, all of a sudden, she's the hot buzz. Why? Well, first they put her on a couple of cards that were down, and people started to see her. And then they ended up with her on one card where she was in the main draw, and then she gets a championship fight. And all of a sudden, she's the hot ticket. There's only one way you get to learn who she is, and they've got to start having those shows that don't have all the big names that everyone recognizes. And if you don't want to watch it, don't watch it. No one's mandating that you watch all the shows.
John, aside from the fact that you and I work in the MMA industry, we're both hardcores. And I do understand the level of angst, and I think angst is the right word from fans.
Angst, that's a good it's word, angst, dude.
Or angst for our international angst. Listeners, that you have to watch everything, and somehow you're less of a hardcore. You've cheated yourself or you've cheated the sport. I've got to watch everything. I've got to watch all of these prelims on FS2, even though I don't know a lot about these fighters. But you're right. The reality is you don't have to watch everything. And for the international listeners outside the U.S. and Canada, you may not get this analogy, but please bear with me. If you look at college football, John, with the way the college bowl system is now, you have a lot of very, very small and very new bowl games, which is 6-5 team versus 6-5 team from not major Division I conferences. People say, oh, the purity of the bowl system. My argument is, don't watch it then. If you don't want to watch Baylor versus, I don't know, help me out, John.
Dude, Baylor was pretty good last year.
Baylor's so you pretty good. I'm an NFL guy. I'm not a
If you don't want to watch
guy.
Wyoming versus Idaho State, I understand.
And no one's going to think less of you. And that's probably the point we're in, that fans feel like, I've got to keep my hardcore card. I've got to watch everything. You don't have to watch everything. You're absolved.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm going to be as flat out as I can say it. I probably see more fights, or I see as many fights. I'm not going to say more. I see as many fights as anybody. I watch as many fights as anybody out there. And there's no way that I can watch everything that's out there. It just doesn't happen. You know, I'll tape, you know, UFCs. I'll tape Bellators. I'll tape World Series of Fightings. And I'm taping that while I'm actually doing another show somewhere or doing something. But there's so many fights and organizations out there, there's no way that you're going to watch them all. If your whole thing is to say, I'm a hardcore fan because I watch the UFC, great. You're not a hardcore fan. You're a UFC fan, and that's awesome. Okay, no problem. You know, no one's taking away your man card, but that's a UFC fan. There's a whole lot more MMA out there than just the UFC.
Yeah, John, you know, to the issue of diluting the product, and I just showed that I don't know much about college football. The flip side of that is I'm a huge NFL fan. I'm not to the level of me being an MMA hardcore, but I'm a really serious but pretty close to hardcore. I think I am a hardcore NFL fan. The thing with the NFL and a theory which I subscribe to, why the NFL was able to overtake baseball in the 1980s and be the clear-cut number one in the U.S. is because they have not, quote-unquote, diluted their product. Yeah, they have a Thursday night package now, and they've had Monday night since 1970. They've had the Sunday night game, I believe, since 1987. But you're not seeing NFL games Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They still have the anticipation, the buildup. They've resisted playing 18 games in the regular season. They've stuck that at 16. They still want to have that buildup, not diluting the product. I don't know if it's an apples-to-apples comparison, but I think there's something in there with the NFL's business model. And maybe that's also some of the heat directed towards the NFL, that you're just giving people too much to where nothing is special anymore.
First off, that's not apples to apples at all. All right, let's take a look at the NFL and what the NFL does. First off, they are doing games on Monday night. They are doing games on Thursday night. Every now and then, there's actually a Friday night game. Then they get into doing Saturday. So people are looking and saying, hey, what the hell? There was an NFL game on yesterday? Why? That's a Saturday. That's a college day. And they do slip them in there, especially when there is that, you know, spacing between the college regular season and the bowl games. But they're also, let's take a look at what they're doing. you don't get a choice being a fan of the NFL on what games you're really going to be able to watch. Because, see, when they do their whole schedule, let's say that there are, you know, 8 games played at, you know, if it's West Coast time, it's 10 o'clock. If it's East Coast time, it's 1 o'clock.
Right.
All right. And those 8 games, you got to make a choice, because I hate to tell you, you can't watch them all. All right. And then it gets to the point where it's 1 o'clock Pacific time or 4 o'clock Eastern time. And we get another, we'll say 8 games, 7 games maybe. And you don't get a choice. You can't watch them all. It doesn't mean you're not an NFL fan. You're going to be a fan of a team. That's going to be the one you're going to follow. But the NFL is not friendly about making it available for everyone to watch every game. You can't do it. Yeah, you know, even if you get the, you know, the NFL, you know, Red Zone or any of those things off DirecTV or the whole package where you get to watch, you're going to tape every game and watch them? Come on, it just doesn't happen.
Of course not. Absolutely. Well, every week on this podcast, we bring you our poll question. You can cast your vote on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. This week's poll question: do you feel that the UFC is now holding too many events? Vote yes or no at letsgetitonpodcast.com.
No, we need more. It gives me more work. No,
well, you know, that's the argument, too, is that more fight cards means more work for the fighters and fight industry people. You and I are fight industry people.
Yeah, it really doesn't mean more work for me, but it does mean more work for the fighters. And everyone's sitting there complaining about, oh, fighter pay or this or that, the fighters. And you want them to put on less fights. You can't have it both ways.
And also, too, because if the UFC would go back to, as I said, in 2009 when they did 20 fights, they're purging their fight roster, because you can't keep that many fighters happy, John, to your point, approaching 600 active fighters on the UFC roster now. If you're doing 20 or 22 events, what are you going to do, fight people once a year? That's not a business model. Also, with the UFC's business model, and it really hasn't been this way since the Art Davey era, which ended after UFC 5, and he and Horion Gracie sold out to Bob Meyerowitz, you're not getting those pride cards. That's never really been the UFC, where you're getting the pride cards, where number 8 and number 9 is really enticing. Affliction tried it. It lasted 2 shows. The UFC has always been, I think, the boxing model, which is we top load the card, and then we have a lot of prelims. Some are entertaining, some are enticing, some aren't.
Yeah, but man, I'll tell you what, I'm going to disagree with you on one part. The UFC, for the most part, you take a look at a boxing card. Take a look at Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao. All right, name me the other people on that card.
Yeah, it's funny. I watched the co-main.
Come on,
and
Sean.
It's slipping my mind. Yeah, we were at a party, didn't even pay attention to it.
Why is it slipping your mind?
Because they were not great fighters who really are mid-level.
Exactly. But now let's take a look. Okay, last UFC that was a pay-per-view, 189. Let's take a look at the people on that card. All right, you had Conor McGregor against Chad Mendes. Is that a good fight?
Yeah.
That's a great fight.
Spectacular.
Okay, you had Robbie Lawler against Rory McDonald. Is that a good fight going in before you even to see the fight?
Yeah, it's main event in its own right.
All right, we have Jeremy Stephens against Dennis Bermudez. Is that a good fight?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, we have on the prelims, we have Matt Brown against Tim Means, which I thought was going to be fight of the night before it happened, because, man, both those guys are just go-for-it-all tough dudes. Is that a good fight?
Yeah, outstanding fight.
Okay, and so, I mean, the list goes on and on that, you know, what was there. This was an incredible card. Brad Pickett going against Thomas Almeida. A lot of people don't know Almeida. They know Pickett to a point. Great fight. You know, all of these fights that were on that card, you can't complain about any of them. So there's a big difference. What the UFC is doing is on their pay-per-views, where they're asking you for money, they're saying, I'm going to give you some incredible fights, or at least I'm going to try to give you. You know, Joe Silva can only sit there and say, I think this is going to be a good fight, and try to put it out there and see if the fighters can match up to what he thinks is going to happen. But they're giving you that on the ones that they're asking for your money. And then on the other ones that you're getting for free, you know, hey, that they're putting some guys that maybe you don't know, but that's part of the whole thing, is to get you to have an interest in that fighter. They've got to have you start putting eyeballs on their fighters. This is the same thing Bellator is doing when they're sitting there and they're twiddling, you know, Kimbo against Ken Shamrock out in front of you with their fingers on the magic puppet thing, because they want you to put your eyes on Patricio Ferrer and Daniel Weichel. They want you to put your eyes on Michael Chandler against can't even think of who he
fought. Derek Campos.
Campos, exactly. They want you to see, you know, Daniel Strauss against Henry Corrales. Those are the guys that they actually want you to see because those are the guys of the future.
And John, to your point on the UFC cards too, I like this shift and it's been very subtle but noticeable. On the pay-per-view cards, the prelims on Fox Sports 1 have a prelim main event. It's not necessarily billed as the prelim main event, but you can see it on the free show on Fox Sports 1 culminating in that really big fight. And then they reset and you go to pay-per-view. Or even on the fight night cards, on the prelims, it's maybe not as big, but there is a little bit of a culmination. You know, I'm really of the attitude that the more fights, the better for MMA. And again, no one's going to think less of you as a hardcore if you don't watch everything. I understand the feeling that you need to, but no one's going to think less of you. And as we've always said, there are MMA fans and there are UFC fans. An MMA fan who thinks of himself as a hardcore, herself as a hardcore, is watching every UFC, but they're also watching every Bellator, World Series of Fighting. They're going on YouTube. They're trying to watch ONE Championship.
They're watching Titan, Legends. They're watching all these things.
They're going to local shows, exactly, as opposed to the UFC hardcores.
Exactly. And, you know, look, at you can't make everybody happy. All you can do is do what's, you know, as a business person, all the business person can do is say, what is best for my product? What is best for my employees? And you know, no matter what, although the UFC's employees, as far as fighters, are contractual employees, almost like a 1099, they still have certain things they are contractually obligated to that they must do. So they've got to put those guys out in fights.
John, I'm somebody who follows sports television ratings very closely. I like when I see that UFC events on Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2 are usually number one or number two for those networks. You know, maybe the ratings aren't as big as what Fox thought it would be when they signed this contract with UFC. But if you go look at the numbers for Fox Sports 1, UFC is really their dominant programming. They do well with motorsports. They're doing better with soccer, but that's really their dominant programming. Fox Sports 2 sometimes feels like the UFC library network. They do extremely well. So there's a reason why you're putting on these fights. The television viewership numbers are there. You're selling tickets, but beyond that, this isn't just about selling tickets. It's about attracting television viewers. The numbers are very good. Even weaker cards, the television ratings are still really strong.
Absolutely. You know, and this is where, again, this is business. You know, the UFC is a promotion that puts on a lot of fights, but they have partners here. And their partners, although they're not partners in the actual Ultimate Fighting Championship, when you look at Fox Sports, Fox Sports is a partner. They need to make Fox Sports happy. They are contractually obligated to put on so many shows for Fox Sports. Now, it doesn't say exactly who they've got to put in those shows, but you know they put, you know, even like you're talking about, I thought that Matt Brown Tim Means fight on 8-189, you know, it ended quicker than I thought, and you know Matt Brown did a great job. You know, he hurt Tim and got rid of him, but I thought that was going to be just a barn burner of a fight. They've had, you know, people, Miesha Tate has been, you know, she's one of the top female fighters out there. She's been on the prelims of Fox Sports 1 before a pay-per-view. Uriah Faber's been there. They're putting on really good fighters on that Fox Sports 1 for people to watch for free all the time. And so I really don't know, you know, complaining that there's too many, that's a bad complaint because it can absolutely be the opposite. That's a lot worse.
And to Dana White's point, too, and he said this in numerous interviews, including the one earlier this week with Canada Sportsnet, that he's trying to make the UFC into an international product. And it's a lot easier to do that when you're holding live events in countries as opposed to just selling television rights in those countries. Again, we'll go back to the NFL. Why do you think the NFL is so in love with London right now? It's a lot easier to build your audience when you're actually putting live games on in the country than just selling television product to that country. The UFC, of course, with their digital network Fight Pass, that allows them to do shows that maybe even Fox Sports 1 wouldn't be that interested in. But again, the hardcores want to watch it. The numbers are there. It's more content. You're developing fighters. I developed a really good appreciation for European and Eastern European MMA for the years I was the M1 commentator before I went to Bellator. There are some outstanding fighters there, and this is their opportunity to come in. Start winning on those small shows, and then you work your way up. You get your notice. You get your recognition.
Yeah, just like I talked about with Joanna. Like, people didn't know who she was. And there are other fighters out there. There's some Russian fighters that are fantastic. There's, some of these people coming out of the European countries, they're going to be the stars. And you know what? There's only one way they can start to show you those people is, you know, put them on these cards so you can see them fight. You know, and you're never going to satisfy everyone with putting the biggest names on every card. You can't do that. It just doesn't work out. It doesn't work out, you know, for a lot of reasons. But, you know, to sit there and to complain about saying, oh, there's too many fights, they're diluted now. Nothing's diluted. They're still putting on huge fights between the best fighters. They just have a lot of fights going on with fighters that the average fan, even sometimes the hardcore fan, doesn't yet know. And that's causing them to say, oh, this guy's no good. This girl's no good. Just because you don't know someone doesn't mean that they're not fantastic.
John, final point on this. Do you think the UFC is headed to a situation where it's going to be like the old Tuesday night fights in the 80s and the 90s on USA Network, where literally every week you're going to see a fight card? I don't remember any boxing fans ever complaining about Tuesday night fights. We all love Tuesday night fights, right?
That's because it was the best.
Sometimes the cards weren't great and nobody made you watch them, but you knew every Tuesday night on USA Network, you were going to get live boxing. Do you think the UFC is headed to that, that maybe every Saturday night on Fox Sports 1, there's going to be a live fight card?
I absolutely do. I think someday you're going to end up having, you know, every week, you know, the time, and there's going to be fights on at that time on this channel, and you know where to go, and people, you know, again, no one's making you watch. If you don't want to watch, don't watch. But there are people out there that want to watch, and there's someone providing that product for them.
Well, every week here on Let's Get It On, we answer your questions, ask away, whatever you would like for Big John McCarthy to answer. As I always request, please, please, please include a pronunciation guide for your name. Send your questions via email to info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. First up, our friend and the highly accomplished MMA fighter, Jeff Curran. Jeff, we actually recorded something with him a few weeks ago when we were in Wichita, Kansas, when I was still with
Bellator. Is this another recorded question?
He actually emailed this in. He got a hold of me and he said, what's the email address? I have another question. So well done, Jeff. And we do love hearing from fighters. So Jeff writes, this question is about the cartwheel kick. It states in the rules that if anything other than the bottoms of your feet touch the ground, then you're a grounded fighter. In this case, with a cartwheel kick, the attacker throwing the kick puts one hand on the ground. So 1 foot, one hand. If the defending fighter times a head kick, imagine a soccer kick to the face of the person doing a cartwheel, would that be considered legal?
Okay, as long as that kick is launched while they are not in a position where their hand is on the ground, it's going to be legal. Doesn't matter if the person's hands on the ground and they launch it, you're looking at an illegal kick. But if, as long as they are in a position where you see them starting to move and you start to launch a kick and their hand hits the ground, it does not matter. That kick was launched while that person was considered a standing fighter. It's a legal kick. That was a simple one. I love that.
Isn't that a great question, though? And what I love, too, is that the way our sport evolves, we're not even 22 and a half years old, that there are still those vagaries in the rule book that, you know, Jeff Curran, what a pioneer in the sport, how accomplished, and that's a solid, legitimate question. That's why you, John, and all the top referees, you have these fighter meetings pre-fight.
Absolutely. So we can answer a question just like that many times that we do. But you look at it, and this is where when people think, oh, it's easy to referee. These are the things when someone says, oh, what was it like to referee that fight? We're looking for things completely different than the average fan. We're looking for those things when we're seeing a guy all of a sudden start to do. I'm looking to see, is he down when that's launched? Because then I can make my right call. And everyone can sit there and be mad. His hand was on the ground. They're going to show videotape. His hand was on the ground. Look at his on the ground when he got kicked to the face. It doesn't matter. It matters when it was launched. Okay. So, you know, this is when we become bad guys and say we suck. And you're right. We suck. But it's, you know, you're never going to make everyone happy because there's someone that wants that fighter who got kicked to win and he gets knocked out by it. And they say that you're the reason why, even though you're not. It's just part of the rules.
Great question from Jeff Curran. Again, always happy to hear from fighters. Also, always happy to hear from our international listeners. This question comes from Stefan Brand in Sweden. John, how much of an impact can a fighter have on a referee in persuading him to let the fight continue by talking to him, even though he is in trouble and not able to fight back at the moment?
That's a good question. None. Okay. If you're a good referee, look it. Fighters are going to try to do things all the time to, you know, influence things like that. I tell fighters, first off, you know, when you hear me talking to a fighter, I've been in the back and I've told the fighter when I say something, someone that's watching on TV or even in the stands that hears something, they think that they're, you know, they interpret what I say and they think that, you know, they understand what I'm doing. No, I've told the fighter in the back, when I say this, this is what it means to you. And I explain it and I put it down so there's no doubt in their mind when I'm saying it, what it means. So if I sit there and I say, you know, Bob, watch the back of the head. That doesn't mean, hey, I want you to look at the back of the head. It doesn't mean that I want you to attack the back of the head again. I've told him in the back, when I say that, this is what it means to you. It's telling you, Bob, that was a good shot, okay? It's on your opponent. He's the one that created that to be in that spot, so that's good. I just don't want you to come with a second one in the same area because now you're starting to draw me into your fight. So I'm going to make verbal statements to him. I tell fighters all the time, I will never ask you a question during the fight that you need to answer. I will never make a statement to you that I need a verbal answer from you. Now, there are fighters that will talk during the fight. They'll talk to their opponent. They'll talk to the referee. They'll try to, you know, draw the referee into doing something for them. You know, a good referee is never going to be drawn into having someone telling them what to do. Usually it's going to almost work in the reverse for him. You ask him to do it, you're going to wait longer. Okay, you do your job, I'll do my job. Now, when you have somebody that you're looking at and you say something, you know, people are asking me what Robbie Lawler was saying during his fight with Rory McDonald. Because at one point, I looked at Robbie and Robbie started to get hit with shots. He was hurt, but not badly. But he started to, instead of, you know, being an active participant and competitor in the fight, he started to stop his offensive output and he started to become completely defensive. And he stopped throwing and he started getting hit with big shots that could end up putting him in a bad spot. And so I told him, you know, my basic thing is if you're in that position where he was at standing up, I'm going to tell you, you know, fight back. Because what I'm looking for is your reaction. When I say fight back, I'm not telling you to throw your hands. I'm not telling you to grab a hold of your opponent. I'm not telling you to move. But all of those things tell me that your brain is still working the way I want to see it working. So I want to see something out of you that is a smart either offensive maneuver or defensive positioning that tells me that brain is working the way I want to see it working. And so, you know, Robbie in his form at the time, you know, said, you know, looked at me and, you know, didn't look at me, but basically said, you know, John, you know, I'm good. I'm fighting. And that's fine. He can do that. But I don't really take what he's saying into account. I take his actions. I take what I see from his body movement and what he's doing to either quell the attack that his opponent is putting on him or to show me that he's actually coming up with something on his own.
Next up, Irish Dave, who writes, at UFC 178 in the Romero versus Kennedy fight, John, why didn't you either deduct a point to Romero or get him up off the stool when it was clear what his team was trying to do? He was saved by the bell in round two, and they were stalling time. I think Tim Kennedy was robbed in that fight. Again, that's Irish Dave. That's not me saying that, John.
Okay, you want to answer it for me, Sean?
Well, you know, I think it's funny because usually on these questions, you're playing offense. Now you have to play a little defense here, John.
Nah, it's all good. Look it. All right. Irish Dave, is that what it was?
Irish Dave. And you know what? Fair point. You know, this is the type of show you don't have to agree with us. We like to hear this. It's nice to be able to have a platform and to converse. That's what this show is all about.
Okay. Let's break this down again. I think I've already talked about this before, but Irish Dave, it's a good question. Here's the whole thing you need to look at. Was Yoel Romero saved by the end of the round in round two? Yeah, he probably was. He got hurt really bad, and Tim was going after him, but it was the bell that made me stop the action, which took away Tim's ability to possibly finish you well in that fight. So we have the break. I am not the person in charge of the break. If you see those inspectors coming in, okay, they have a job, and they're supposed to do their job. When you see the cut men coming in, they have a job, and they're supposed to do that job. And I'm busy in between that round bringing in a doctor to look at Yoel Romero to make sure that the doctor is okay with me allowing this fight to continue. I bring the doctor in. He's with Yoel Romero. I go over to Tim Kennedy to look at him and to make sure that, you know what, he's okay, because he's got a lot of swelling on his on one eye and stuff, just to make sure he's okay. I come back and I converse with my doctor, and my doctor tells me he's fine. He's talking. He's great. Let him go. So I have a fighter that the doctor says is good to go. At this point, I hear a whistle, and that means that we're going to get the seconds out. And I turn towards Tim Kennedy's side with Greg Jackson and tell him, hey, let's seconds out, let's go. And the inspector there is getting them up and getting them out. When I turn towards Yoel Romero's side, I start walking towards Yoel, and the problem starts with not Yoel not getting up. That's the inspector's job. And yeah, there was some things lacking there, but what was lacking was communication, because Yoel is a Spanish speaker. And my inspector was a New York speaker. And so, their languages crossed. But the real problem was, I have a cut man who works not for the corner. He's not part of Yoel Romero's team, who has put way too much Vaseline on a big cut that he had to take care of. And he doesn't have a lot of time to do it. So he's pressing. He's pushing to try to get this cut closed. He's waiting till that last moment, and then he doesn't have Vaseline on it. I guess when I find this out later, he doesn't have Vaseline on when the whistle blows. And so he's quickly trying to put Vaseline into that cut to keep it closed. And he puts way too much, and he streaks it all the way back to Yoel's ear. And now the problem is that Vaseline can become a problem in the fight when Tim grabs a hold of Yoel's head in anywhere, anything. He now has Vaseline all over his hand, which is now going to be on Yoel's body, which is going to make him slippery, so Tim can't hold on to him. And I tell him right away, get that cleaned off. Get the cut man up here, because the cut man has left, and get that cleaned off. This has nothing to do with Yoel's corner. Yoel's corner is not doing anything wrong. Unfortunately, again, there is that language barrier. And the inspector tries to get the cut man up to help out getting the Vaseline off, because I don't want to touch it, because if I touch it and open the cut up, then I'm doing something to impede possibly Yoel's ability to win the fight by now having a cut that's open and bleeding into his eye. So we try to get the cut man to come back. He doesn't. They bring the corner man up, who again doesn't speak English, but is told, get up here. And so about this time, Tim Kennedy has come across and is sitting there starting to complain. I tell Tim to get back to his corner, which only takes more time. And then I see that the corner person that has come in is not the cut man that I want. I tell him, get out. I take and I rub the Vaseline off of the cut. I do open up the cut. It was not, you know, what I wanted to do, but I had to get the fight going. And Yoel is told by me to stand up. We get him up off of the stool, and we get the fight going. The time on it, well, I guess, was 1 minute 28 seconds of that break. Now, that is more time than normal, but every break in MMA is more than a minute break. Most of them average out to about a minute 15. So, and that's because you'll see us standing in the middle. We're ready to go, and it's TV people talking. It's Sean Wheelock talking. Okay, because he has things that he has to put out, and the production is sitting there telling him to put stuff out, and he's trying to talk real fast, and I've got a guy that's putting his hand up telling me, don't start the fight. And so that happens all the time. I've had rounds, you know, breaks and rounds that were longer than a minute 28. Now, if you want me to take a point from Yoel, deduct a point from him, why am I deducting a point from him? It wasn't his corner man that caused me the problem. That person that caused the problem is not part of Yoel's corner. I got two people that are causing me a problem. I have an inspector from the state of Nevada who's causing me a problem because he can't handle the situation that he has. And I have a cut man who is working for the promoter. The promoter has put him there, is paying him. It's not Yoel Romero or his camp. So now you want me to take points off of Yoel Romero's card for something that is out of his control. That's why points weren't taken. If it was his corner that had caused the problem, trust me, I would have done something about it. But at the time, I looked at it and said, this is not his fault. This is somebody else's. That's why points didn't come off.
So you want to be an MMA referee. It's always easy. Remember, email us your questions, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. And well done, the Irish Dave. Again, write us whatever you want. We are that type of show. You don't have to agree. Challenge us. Put us in a position to defend. Whatever. We want to hear those types of questions. Well done to all of our questioners. They keep pouring in from around the world every week. Info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Well, still to come on this. That's exactly right. Still to come on this week's episode of Let's Get It On, John and I will discuss the aftermath of the UFC's decision to no longer use the incredibly popular cutman Stitch Duran following Duran's critical comments of the UFC's deal with Reebok. And we'll take you inside the Chris Honeycutt versus Paul Bradley fight from Bellator 140, which John refereed and was ultimately ruled a no contest. With Big John McCarthy, I'm Sean Wheelock, and you are listening to Let's Get It On. It's the book the Wrestling Observer calls a must-read for any MMA fan. Jonathan Snowden of Bleacher Report describes as riveting and amazing, and thefightnerd.com says nothing is held back. Pick this book up right away. Is This Legal? The inside story of the first UFC from the man who created it, written by UFC founder Art Davey and me, Sean Wheelock, with the foreword by John McCarthy, is now available to listeners of this podcast at the special price of $12.48. That's far less than you'll pay for the book on Amazon and half price of what you'll pay in store at Barnes & Noble. Buy it directly from the publisher now online at ascendbooks.com and enter the promo code LEGAL50. That's ASCENDbooks.com, promo code LEGAL50. Learn the true story of how the UFC came into existence in the book that Randy Couture describes as honest, shocking, and enthralling, and that has a rating of 4.9 out of 5 stars from Amazon Reader Reviews. Is This Legal? The inside story of the first UFC from the man who created it by UFC founder Art Davey and me, Sean Wheelock, with the foreword by Big John McCarthy. Available now online at ascendbooks.com for just $12.48 when you use the promo code LEGAL50. Hey, this is Sean Wheelock.
And this is Big John McCarthy.
If you're a fan of our show, then you're going to love the rest of the Ignotainment podcast lineup.
Like the Ocho Man behind the eight ball and the Whiskey Philosopher with Jeff Cooper.
You can find these great podcasts and more at Ignotainment.com. Thanks again and enjoy the rest of the program.
Let's get it on!
When looking for new and exciting clothing concepts, look no further than Lambs to Lions. Lambs to Lions has great designs that incorporates the past from boxing with the new and exciting evolution of MMA. We all start out as lambs, but with time, training, and hard work, we can all become lions. Be part of the Lambs to Lions movement and check out all of their great designs. You can get your Lambs to Lions gear at the Las Vegas Fight Shop or go to lambstolionsbrand.com.
Now, back to Let's Get It On with your hosts, Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
On Tuesday, highly respected and popular cutman Jacob Stitch Duran announced via Twitter that he had been fired by the UFC for critical comments he made regarding the promotion's exclusive apparel deal with Reebok. Duran's forced exit has created a media and social media firestorm for the Ultimate Fighting Championship, furthering the negative feelings, John, that have already been building towards the Reebok deal.
Yeah, this has not been a good one, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate how the whole thing has taken place. It's unfortunate that the UFC is not going to have the services of, you know, arguably the best cut man, if not the best, one of the best there is in the business. Stitch is a great guy. He's incredible at what he does. He makes my job so easy. And people have no concept sometimes of what the cut man's really doing and how hard it is to do the job that they do. You know, because it's an easy job to do when, you know, the guy's got a little nick or, you know, the girl's got a little swelling and you sit there and you're in the cage and you're pushing on that with the little end swell or something. And life is easy and good. You don't have a whole lot, you know, going on. But when you have a fight, similar, you know, in fact, Stitch was, part of the fight, Rory McDonald against Robbie Lawler. You know, I can tell you that after that fight, the next day, Robbie Lawler came up to me and said, "Hey, I want to thank you. Thank you for what you did in that fight. Thanks for letting me go." And Stitch was right there and he grabbed a hold of Stitch and hugged him and said, "Thank you. He goes, you made it possible. And what Robbie's talking about is, you know, Robbie was, he had a lot of swelling that was going on with his right eye. You know, Rory's jab had really, you know, hit him a lot, and it was really starting to puff up. He had a cut that was a nasty cut on his lip. He has the cut on his head, and he has another cut inside on his lip. So Stitch, in that 50 seconds of time, this is why everyone is talking about like that, you know, that pose down at the end of the fourth round. You got Rory standing there, you know, mono with Robbie, and neither one wants to move. And I'm in the middle, and everyone's asking me, what were you thinking? And I swear to God, the only thing I was thinking is, God damn it, guys, get back to your corner. The cut men need time with you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really what I was thinking. I don't waste the time here. And, you know, Stitch is working on Robbie. You got to figure he's got one hand on a lip that he's closing while he's also working on a cut inside of his mouth. The other one, he's got an end swell and a thing on top of his head. His hands are all over doing all kinds of work. And he did a phenomenal job on Robbie. And that's what allows Robbie to continue on in the fight. You know, compared to what I just talked about with, you know, the question that Irish David asked, you know, cut men when they are, you know, in a position that they don't do their job to that optimum level like Stitch did, it can cause us a problem in the fight. So having good cut men, you know, if everyone thinks that all cut men are the same. They're not. There's huge differences between them. The good ones are gold. You know, there's the Dean Lassiter's at Bellator, you know, Matt Madsen. Those guys are gold. Sid, he's gold. You look at Don House, Rudy Hernandez. Those guys are, they're worth their weight in gold because they keep your fight alive. A fight that possibly would end before its natural conclusion based upon cuts and injuries is sometimes, you know, has to be stopped. And most of the time, those cut men are doing things to quell that situation. And Stitch was one of the best at doing that. So it's troubling.
John, I think a point of clarification, and even a lot of the hardcores may not be aware of this fact. So in boxing, the cut man is part of your fight team. You're bringing him. He's associated with you. You might be the only fight that he's working on the card. He is part of your camp, part of your team. You're paying him as the fighter. Historically in MMA, and there are a few exceptions, but by and large, from the UFC, Bellator, all the way up and down the ladder to the smallest mom and pop AMI shows, it is the promotion that hires, contracts, and pays the cutmen. I've seen small AMI shows around Kansas City where on the Kansas and Missouri sides where there's just one cutman. And he's assigned to work both corners, but the cut men are neutral. Usually now for the bigger promotions, one is going to be blue corner and one is going to be red corner. But that's why Stitch Duran is in this position, because he has been employed as an independent contractor by the Ultimate Fighting Championship. In theory, I guess a fighter could say, I want Stitch Duran. I'm willing to pay him whatever amount. And I don't think the UFC could block that. But as far as being brought in as that quote unquote neutral or certain corner cut man by the UFC, that's where his career is over right now because of these Reebok comments.
Exactly. What's, you know, here's what people don't look at. And this is where the problem lies, you know, with what happened with, you know, Stitch and Stitch talking. Stitch was employed by the UFC and all, you know, the UFC is the one that basically set the framework for, you know, fight men in, you know, in the world of MMA. It was UFC 1. They brought in Leon Tabbs and they brought in Sam Solomon to work the corners. One had the, you know, red corner, one had the blue corner, and those guys were the cut men. And the UFC has continued that from UFC 1. They've been bringing in cut men. And when, you know, Dana ended up bringing in Stitch, Stitch did a lot to improve some of the things that they were doing. And then Stitch is, you know, he's an enterprising guy and he decides, you know, hey, I'm going to start wearing this vest and I'm going to start putting, you know, Tap Out on it, you know, and Tap Out started paying him. And he started getting these sponsors. He got, you know, he would wear a watch. The watch company would sponsor him. And he'd wear, you know, a sweatband on his arm that, you know, had a name of it. And then he, you know, went to one more round and he started doing all these things. But here's the one thing that people, yes, he made money doing that. Okay, he had sponsors, and sponsors are going to pay him for the time that he is at that show, you know, putting, you know, whatever it's going to be. Hey, he gets paid, you know, $1,000 a show, $2,000. I don't know what it was, and I don't care. But, you know, Stitch was the guy, and he was getting the other cut men the same thing. But what you have to look at, what is imperative for, you know, fans to understand, is the UFC looks at it and says, yes, okay, you're doing this. Okay. But it's their show. And no different if it's the UFC or we'll say Bellator. It's Bellator's show. It's the UFC show. And that cut man working on that show is able to get those sponsors based upon being on that show. And so this is where it becomes the problem, when Stitch comes out and says, we're losing, we lost all my sponsors, I lost money. He's not lying. He's telling the truth because he now has to wear the Reebok vest or smock or whatever you want to call it. And it only has the Reebok label on it. It doesn't have all the ones that he had before. But the truth is he got those sponsors before because he's working the UFC. If Dean Lassiter at Bellator, is not working at Bellator, those sponsors that he has are not going to want to pay him to put their patch on his vest because he's not at Bellator. And so as the person that's working that, you've got to understand, I get this because I am here. And, it's a matter of you got to be smart about it. And there's never anything wrong with telling the truth until the truth bites you in the butt. And in this situation, the UFC is looking at saying, look at, we love you. And I know there's people there, they love Stitch. But I can't have you talking out about money that you feel is owed to you by a deal that we did for the fighters that we think is best for our company. This is the direction that we're going. And now you're going to say that we're taking money out of your pocket. I've been putting a lot of money in your pocket for a long time, allowing you to be part of our show. Yes, you do a great job for me, but don't sit there and come out against me when you've gotten that because of me. And I know that's hard for people to look at. And trust me, it's hard for me to say because I love Stitch. He is my friend. I absolutely am going to, want to see him at every show that I do because I know when I'm working with him, I'm working with one of the best and I don't have to worry about that fighter. And for me as a referee, he brings a lot to the table as far as putting me at ease because of how good he is. But, as any employee of a company, you got to be careful about what you come out and say. Now, I'm not saying he said anything terrible, but he basically is saying, you know what? You're taking money out of my pocket. You're making it so I don't make the same, and I don't like it, and I don't think it's fair. And you can say those things, but then it's the other person's right to say, okay. And if you don't think it's right, then that's fine. We don't want you part of our, promotion, and you go work somewhere else.
And John, he's not just an employee or wasn't just an employee. He was an independent contractor. And I know a lot of attorneys listen to our
program.
Please
explain the difference to people.
So as an independent contractor, you're being paid per show, per event. As an employee, he would be salaried. He would be getting X amount of dollars for the year, probably receiving paychecks in equal denominations every 2 weeks. He would get benefits, insurance, dental, all of that. As an independent contractor, he may be guaranteed X number of fights. He may have a minimum, but he is paid for showing up. If he canceled and said, I have a wedding that week, he's not getting paid. So it's a very, very tenuous position to speak out as an independent contractor. And that's the position Stitch Duran found himself in.
Yeah. I mean, and trust me, man. I mean, you never want to see the good guys leave. And Stitch is one of the good guys. And you never want to see him leave, especially under conditions that are not, his, the way he wants it. He's not leaving because he wants to leave. You can look at, Burt Watson, another great guy. Burt made the choice on his own. He's the one that said, I'm out. I'm done. They didn't get rid of him. But, a lot of people they're pissed off at the UFC when, it was Burt Watson's, decision to finally leave. And, and I can tell you, look at Burt and I have been friends from the very beginning. And there were, many times I sat down with Burt. I left and wasn't around the UFC for a long time. And somewhere around 2010, I did my first UFC since coming back, which was 3 years since I came back or 2 years, I don't know. And Bert, you know, sees me and he comes up and he's hugging me and stuff. He said, I want to talk to you later. And I said, no problem. And so after the show, in one of the locker rooms, Bert and I sat down and we had a heart-to-heart talk about him leaving. You know, and he was getting tired and, you know, there was a lot going on. And I explained to him, you know, just the realities of, you know, the way I looked at it, kind of discussed what I thought he should do. And he had decided to stay on. And that was great. And then we had another one of those conversations when it was getting, you know, overwhelming and his wife was getting sick and things were happening. You know, people's lives change. And so when Bert decided to leave, you know, there's a ton of people that are pissed off. And trust me, I'm pissed off. I want to see Bert because he's awesome back there. And he's a mainstay. He's a staple. But here's the one thing, you know, I tell people all the time. And it's no different for me, for you, for anyone. Anybody that out there that thinks that they're irreplaceable, there's no one that can do what they do, you're wrong. There's always going to be someone to take your place. I tell people all the time, man, you know what? There's this guy that they call the President of the United States, and they replace him at least every 8 years too. Anybody can be replaced. They may not be as good. They may not, but you can be replaced. And so you need to be smart when you're, you know, when you're going to talk and you're an independent contractor, which is what, you know, all of us basically are. I work with athletic commissions, but, you know, I need to, you know, be smart about what I say. I can't sit there and say, oh, I think that, you know, Sam Adam One show, the promotion, that sucks. You know, come on, you know, you're going to be working with those people and all of a sudden you're showing that you have a bias there. You've got to be smart about what you say. And if you're not happy with your pay, go talk to them about it. And if they tell you, hey, this is just the way it's going to be, you got two choices. Either sit there and say, okay, I'll try to figure out something out in a different way. Or just say, you know what, that's not good enough for me and I'm going to leave. But, you know, this is the reality of the world that we live in.
This story of Stitch Duran being fired by the UFC has gotten so big that Reebok, from their actual official Twitter account, sent this out on Wednesday. I'll quote it and I'll read directly. UFC fans, this is again from Reebok, we have no input on decisions of UFC employment or fighter compensation. Our focus is providing the best gear for fighters and fans. That's why you have a PR department. That's scramble mode right there, John, because this thing is blowing up. And we've talked about it a lot here on Let's Get It On. All the animosity from the fans, from the fighters, from the managers towards this Reebok deal. And then you see the Stitch Duran firing. And I don't know if it's the tipping point, but this may be getting close to the tipping point.
Well, you know, it's a matter of change is hard for everyone. You know, it's so funny because, you know, I have a lot of change going on at my gym right now. And I've got all these people that are, you know, the sky is falling. Oh, my God, it's the end of the world. And, you know, it's like people have a hard time with change. They get used to something and they become comfortable with it. And that's what they want to see. And Stitch has become part of the UFC. No doubt about it. You know, if someone saw UFC and he wasn't there, it's like, why isn't Stitch Duran here? He should be here. And I understand why they're saying that. You know, there's certain elements that, you know, have become just kind of part of the UFC, even though in some ways they're not, you know. You say Herb Dean, John McCarthy, oh, they're part of the UFC. No, we're not. But we're seeing so much that people just say, oh, we're part of the UFC. It's a matter of, you know, hey, the Reebok people, they're not the ones that did this. They have a deal with the UFC as a company, as a business. But, you know, they're not in, you know, I would seriously doubt they have any even words about Stitch Duran. They probably don't even know who Stitch Duran is.
They would have no idea what a cut man even does at an MMA.
Exactly. Event. You know, they're a clothing company. They have a deal and someone gets fired and now everyone hates Reebok for it. It's like, you know what? It's not Reebok's fault.
You know, John, the last point on this, the good news for Jacob Stitch Duran, because he is such a good person. He's spectacular as a cut man. He's so well-liked throughout the industry. He's going to get other work. Clearly, it's not going to be in the UFC, but Bellator, World Series of Fighting. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes international. He's going to get mid-tier shows. He's going to get mom and pops. He is going to be turning down more gigs than he'll work.
Exactly. Look at, you know, Stitch is going to get plenty of work. But there's things, you know, Stitch used to go to Pride with Josh Barnett. Josh Barnett used to hire him. The same as what you're talking about with boxing. Boxers have their own cut men. They are paid for by the boxer. there's a percentage that they'll usually get, you know, 2%, 3%, 4%, depending upon the level of the fighter and everything. The cut man works off of that. You know, Stitch is with, you know, Vladimir Klitschko. He's, you know, he's with the biggest guys there is in boxing. He's going to still maintain doing that. He's going to maintain doing, you know, other MMA shows. And the real question is going to be for me is when Josh Barnett hires Stitch Duran to be his cut man at the UFC, you know what? I think you're going to see Stitch back at the UFC in a different form. He's just going to be with Josh Barnett. But let's see where that goes as far as other fighters deciding, hey, I want to bring this guy in because I believe in him. I believe in the way he wraps my hands. I believe in the way he takes care of me in my corner. You know what? I don't see where they're going to sit there and say, oh, no, you can't bring him. If he's part of your corner, he's licensed, that's the way that you think you're going to see Stitch Duran working even back in the UFC.
And John, I'll just follow up on this too, is that we talk a lot about historical precedent. Sometimes you do things in sports because that's just how things are done in sports. But if you go back to UFC 1, Art Davey and I put it in our book, Is This Legal?, about the first UFC. Art Davey knew that guys like Royce Gracie, I mean, you were in his camp. You were his main training partner for UFC 1. You didn't have a cut, man, because you're coming from a Brazilian jiu-jitsu school. Ken Shamrock coming out of shoot wrestling and pro wrestling and Pancrase didn't have a cut, man. Taylor Tooley coming out of sumo didn't have a cut, man. So Art knew that he had to get cutmen for the show. So he found Sam Solomon and Leon Tabbs, who were two world-class boxing cutmen at that time in 1993, and that was just the precedent. Well, the promotion does it. If Art Davey had said, nope, it's on your own, MMA would probably look a lot more like boxing with cutmen. In boxing, the promoters don't even think we need to bring in cutmen because the fighters are going to do it. That's just how it's done in the sport.
That's it. And there's just a difference. But you know what? It's always one thing that changes the world. You know what? Just one thing, and it changes the world. And, you know, maybe this is the thing that starts to change the world and how cut men are with, you know, in MMA. You know, fighters have had it pretty goddamn good for a long time, getting the best cut men there are out there and not paying for them at all. The promotion's paying for them. So, you know, again, my real question is, you know, I'm looking at Josh Barnett. Let's see what he does, because he used to hire Stitch for Pride. And I wouldn't be surprised if he tried to hire Stitch for the UFC.
Well, this past Friday at Bellator 140 at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, Chris Honeycutt faced Paul Bradley. John, a fight that you refereed. Now, there were two accidental head clashes, both of which cut Bradley. The second clash of heads led directly to the fight being ruled a no contest, John, in round number two. I'll just say, our friendship aside, it's tough for me to be neutral when we're so close, but I will tell you, that was a master class in procedure as a referee. The way you talk to the fighters, the cage side physician, I think that's something you need to show at trainings.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know what? It's unfortunately, Paul in that fight, both of his cuts were caused by clashing of the heads. But it's the styles of the fighters and what they're doing at times cause it. And Paul was actually the one. As Chris would come in, Paul would be ducking his head down, and they clashed, and that's how he got that, you know, cut on the top of his hairline there, basically. And you look, and you know, you never want a fight to stop off of, you know, a cut. But here's the way that, you know, the doctor is looking at it is, when I stop the fight, I look at Chris, you know, I see he's got no cut. He really doesn't have any mark at all. You know, he's got a little red mark, but it's nothing that's going to change anything in the fight. And when I look at Paul, he's not only got a cut, the cut goes in multiple directions, which is something that you get used to seeing when you have a clash of heads. When you get a punch, you know, a cut caused by a punch is usually a nice straight line. Even cuts by elbows are usually nice straight lines, because there's that pressure point as that elbow goes across, it leaves that pressure mark, and it just makes that cut in that pressure mark, and it's usually a straight line. But when you get a clash of the heads, it's a compression of two round objects that are hard, and the skin gets compressed to the point it starts to split, and it splits sometimes from that point where it hits, and it splits in two different directions. And that's kind of what you got with Paul Bradley. And he had probably about a two and a quarter inch cut, but it had a nice little flap where it had that sectional where it changed directions. And that's what the doctor was concerned with, because he's looking at it saying, all right, he puts pressure on it to see if it'll stop. As soon as he takes the pressure off, it starts to bleed again. And so he goes, it's going to be flowing into this kid's eye. It was a clash of heads that caused this. I have the look at that. You know what? That flap is not good for the safety of the fighter and in the best interest of this fighter. I'm going to say this fight's over, because I don't want him going out having his vision skewed by blood coming into his eye. And that flap of skin is the one thing that I'm going to go off of, saying that's a problem for me. I don't want him to go further. And so we stopped the fight. And it's, you know, a lot of people say, why didn't you go to the scorecards? You cannot go to the scorecards until that fight enters the third round of a three-round fight. It's just part of what MMA is. It's the way it was set up. I would love to see it actually, you know what? You get to the halfway point of the fight. I'd love to see it where, hey, we can go to the scorecards. In boxing, it's always, you got to, you know, enter the fourth round. You can go to the scorecards. But, you know, this was, you know, it's a hiccup for Chris that, you know what, he didn't, you know, get to be able to finish the fight. Maybe he would have won it. It's a hiccup for Paul. Same thing in return. You know, he felt like he was starting to come on and get his timing down, and actually he was doing better. So they can come back and do it again. You know what? Let them come back. Let them, when they're both healthy and there's not that cut that can affect the fight, let them come back and do it again.
And John, as for the issue of, we'll let it go to the scorecards, that's no more than if you're refereeing in the NFL and you say, I like that touchdown, that's 9 points. You just don't have that latitude. It's the two-thirds, three-fifths rule, meaning that in a three-round fight, you can only go to the scorecards on an accidental foul if it's in round three. A five-round fight, it's round four or five. Just remember, there's two-thirds, three-fifths. Had that occurred in round three, that's what is the very rare technical decision. The judges have to score that round, that third round, at exactly that moment, which is why judges are told, always have the score in your head, because it could literally stop like that. You would turn in your scorecards, and then that is a technical decision. But you weren't given that latitude. A point, though, is in the unified rules, technically you're the sole arbiter. But again, you're working with someone who is a doctor, who's an MD, who has a medical license. Sole arbiter aside, this is where common sense comes into play.
Yeah, when you say sole arbiter, you're the one saying, okay, the fight's over. Because you're saying the fight's over because the doctor says, I don't want it to go on. I don't think it should go on. You're going to have to stop the fight. So, you know, to sit there and say, you're the sole arbiter. Yeah, you're the one saying, okay, it's over. But the doctor made the decision. And, you know, that's, there's differences in different states in the way they say it. In California, there's two sole arbiters. There is the ringside physician and the referee are the sole arbiters of the fight. So the ringside physician from out where he's at can say, I want this fight to end. And he can stop the fight. And I've seen it happen even when they're wrong. You know, they have stopped the fight, you know, on a fighter that he's fighting. But the doctor says he wants it stopped. That's what's going to happen. Most states say that the referee is the sole arbiter of the match. But you'll always hear it, on the advice of the ringside physician, referee will say John McCarthy stops the bout because of, you know, and that's what Michael Williams put out. And that's exactly what happened, on the advice of, you know, Dr. Michael Schwartz, who was my ringside physician, who is an outstanding ringside physician. This is a guy that actually started an association called the Ringside Physicians Association, with all ringside physicians from around North America meeting up and getting better at what they do, understanding there's a difference between being a doctor and a ringside physician. He's the one that started that organization. It's a great organization. So this guy, he knows what he's doing.
John, we talk a lot about positioning as a referee. This is why you have to have great positioning when you're refereeing mixed martial arts or any combat sports for that matter. Because before you can use proper procedure, you have to be able to recognize it was an accidental clash of heads. So you have to determine it was a clash of heads and that it was accidental. And then you have to notify the commission table. In this case, it's Mohegan Sun, so it's Mike Mazzulli, and you start your procedure from there.
Exactly. And, you know, this is where, you know, a lot of people sometimes will say, what are you doing when you're going over and you're hitting your fist? You know, it depends on my positioning when I'm near the actual commission table. But if my fighter is, there's a cut that occurs, and it cuts due to a cut. I mean, that's good. A cut occurs to a cut. When a cut occurs due to a punch, I will, as I'm walking by the commission table, I'm going to kind of, I'm not going to look at him, but I'm going to know that I'm by him, and I'm going to point to wherever the cut is. Cut's due to a punch, and I'm going to hit my hand. letting them know, so they know that if I end up stopping the fight, they know on the cut, they know what the outcome is going to be. They know, oh, this is going to be a technical knockout. If I come by and I say cuts due to a clash of heads, it's telling them, oh, if this ends up being stopped because of the cut, we might end up having a no contest. We might have to go to a technical decision. It's putting them in a place where they know exactly which direction we're going to have to go based upon what occurs later on in the fight.
Paul Bradley was an All-American wrestler at the University of Iowa. Chris Honeycutt, an All-American wrestler at Edinburgh University. Two really great wrestling schools. These guys are phenomenal wrestlers. And I could pick it up watching this fight broadcast on the microphone that Paul Bradley's saying, hey, John, we're both wrestlers. Kind of like, well, what do you expect? Of course we're going to go in and bang heads. I'm not sure why Bradley felt compelled to say that to you. I'm not sure what he was arguing for or against, but he did say that. Like, well, what do you expect? We're going to go in.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, he looked, I think he was in that position of, God dang it, I got a cut and he doesn't. You know, so you got to do something to him. And it's like, no, you know, just because he's got a harder head, I can't help that. You know, this is on both of you. And it is on both of them. And it's, you know, again, you know, this is when we talk about unintentional. This is unintentional. They're both just trying to throw hands and they're both coming in and they're ducking their head down. And sometimes just due to styles and the way guys do things, their heads, they're leading with that head first. And it comes in MMA, you know, you can bring your head inside because we allow grappling. And it's a little bit different than boxing, but, you know, it still comes to the same standard. I got an unintentional clash of the heads. Neither guy meant to do it. It wasn't like it was an advert action with their head coming forward. One gets cut. Well, let's see what we can do if we can continue with the fight. And if we can't, then we'll end up having it as a no contest.
John, for me, the takeaway from this is how you handle something before it gets out of control. Our good friend, great referee Rob Hines talks about that all the time. Don't let a situation escalate. And I think back to what we talked about in detail in this program earlier this year in one championship, the Luis Santos versus Ben Askren fight. That just devolved and devolved and devolved to chaos and then to what you're doing, laughing. People were laughing, man, at that situation. You were able to get a hold of this situation immediately, and it never spun out of control. And that ultimately is what referees at all levels have to do.
Well, that, you know, that's your job, is to be the guy that is in control of the situation and understanding what direction this thing can go. And it's, you know, it's so easy for me to sit here after, you know, I had someone ask me a question, you know, over or under 1,200 fights, what have you done? And it's like, really? 1,200, huh? Yeah, it's like, oh, my God. You know, when you know, the best part about doing a lot of fights is that repetition. You get used to certain things, and you know the answer. You know, if something happens, you know your answer. You know where you're going to go. And when you'll see referees that don't have that experience, that are put into positions to have major fights where there's a lot of, you know, elements riding on that fight. There's a lot of eyeballs that are viewing that fight, and something occurs that is out of the norm, and you watch them with not a clue of how to handle it, and they're trying, and I feel bad for them. But I also look and say, why did you put yourself in that position if you weren't prepared to deal with that situation? You know, sometimes, be careful of what you wish for, because when it happens and you don't know how to deal with it, you're going to look stupid. And, you know, this is, every referee needs to, you know, be in a position where they understand where they need to go with what has occurred. And your ability to remain calm and to remain at least in a position of control, telling people, nope, you stand back there, I'll be with you in a second. And just being that guy in the middle that people believe he's going to take care of this the right way, that's going to help you. When it starts to get to a point where, you know, it's like anything. You start to allow someone to do something, they're going to push to see how far they can go. And once they see, oh, I can go this far, they're going to try to go farther. And at that point, you've lost control. You're in trouble. You're going to look stupid. I hope you enjoy the ride.
And then you'll light them up on this program, John. We are back with you next week for an all-new episode of Let's Get It On, first available on Friday. Big John and I will be broadcasting from San Diego, California, on site for the 2015 ABC convention, where a new president of the association will be elected. Download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store for Android. Download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/letsgetitonpodcast, and on Twitter, @PodcastMMA for this show, and for us personally, @JohnMcCarthyMMA and @SeanWheelock. To ask us a question, make a comment, or inquire about becoming a sponsor of Let's Get It On, email us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Again, that is info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. For John McCarthy, our producer Chris Lakin, and our entire crew, I'm Sean Wheelock. Thanks for listening, everyone. This has been a presentation of Ignotainment Media Network, online at ignotainment.com.
Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock, only on the Ignotainment Media Network. Don't forget to leave a rating and review in the comments section of the iTunes podcast store. If you have questions, comments, or are interested in sponsoring the show, contact us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com or check out our additional lineup of podcasts, including Ocho Man, Behind the Eight Ball, The Whiskey Philosopher, and Youth Baseball Talk at ignotainment.com.